we know how to do things. We have been living with this situation since independence. The narrative that India could live with two constitutions, all that is now gone. Politicization of military operations, the damage it sort of causes is to your own professionalism. The kind of military equipment that we have got from Russia, I mean, that equipment wouldn't have come from anywhere else. Ultimately, you know, do your job, do it professionally, and I think that is a source of great satisfaction for you.
Hello and welcome. My name is Anupam Kher. Welcome to the show where for the next half an hour, we will be talking all things India, Bharat with a very special guest. He's a former Northern Army commander known for his distinguished service and expertise in military strategy and national security. Welcome, Lieutenant General Dipinder Singh Hooda ji.
Thank you so much, Anupam.
So wonderful.
Great pleasure to be here.
So honored to be talking to you.
Lieutenant General Dipinder Singh Hooda is a highly decorated former Indian Army officer with a career spanning 40 years. He served as the Northern Army commander from 2014 to 2016, overseeing the 2016 surgical strikes in Pakistan and other key military operations, particularly in Jammu and Kashmir. He's also served in the United Nations mission in Ethiopia and Eritrea. After retiring, he contributed significantly to shaping India's national security strategy by leading a Congress-appointed task force that developed a comprehensive security doctrine in 2019.
So I grew up with the amazing patriotic feelings.
Wonderful.
And whenever I see an army officer, I feel like that because I was born after 8 years of independence. Do you see the same passion for army now among the common people?
Yeah, there is. If you actually look at the way the recruitment rallies are held and the numbers of people who come up, the kind of enthusiasm that is there to join the military forces. And I think over the years, what has not weakened is this, this ethos, pride in uniform, the desire to do well. So, I mean, these are issues that really, I think, keep our army really consistent and very good.
I recently went for a motivational lecture to NDA also, Kharagwasla. It was amazing. So when you go for a training, where did you do your initial training, sir?
So I was exactly 16 years old when I joined the National Defense Academy. Huh. And I removed my uniform when I was 60 years old. I mean, almost all my life has been in uniform.
And you were also not the first person from the armed forces in your family?
In my family, I was, my father was in the army, my elder brother was in the army. So just like a sort of natural progression that, you know, you also had to join the army.
But did you want to do something else or you were happy to be?
Really, you know, just out of school and then straight into NDA.
And I saw the NDA regime. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. Means, mera lecture tha. So there were about 2,500 people, cadets sitting there straight. First of all, I usually use a lot of humor in my speeches. But they were like that. So after the whole thing got over, commandant said it was a successful lecture. I said, there was no reaction. He said, nobody slept.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's
a measure of success.
That's a measure of success.
Yeah, it is.
And it's a four-year training there.
3 years in NDA, and then we do 1 year at IMA in Dehradun. So a total training regime is 4 years, yeah.
And you were in JNK for a very, very important period of ours, yours. How I just want to understand in a situation where when you have to deal with people who are the enemies of our country and you have to strategize, what is the one point that goes on in your mind?
So basically, I think you have a clear objective in the military that you're supposed to do. And I think that's remain sort of foremost in all your planning, what your objective is. If your objective is to bring peace, finish off terrorism in Jammu and Kashmir, then all your actions are tailored accordingly with that single-minded focus and objective.
And Article 370 abrogation has really helped.
Yes, it has. It has.
Do you elaborate how?
So it's, violence levels have very significantly come down. I think the narrative that India could live with two constitutions, which really wasn't possible within a state. You can't have Jammu and Kashmir having a separate constitution and a separate constitution for the country. Some separatist tendencies that arose because of this different constitutional arrangements. I think all that is now gone.
And there are some people who sort of, we are in a free country, people have an opinion about everything, but what do you personally feel when somebody criticizes army in our country?
Look, you know, you obviously sort of feel bad about it, but I think we are professional enough to understand that, you know, as long as you keep doing your job properly.
But that's a professional answer. What is a personal answer?
No, as I said, personally, sometimes you feel hurt. I was responsible for planning the surgical strikes.
Yes, I remember.
And later, you know, there were some questions raised as to did it actually happen.
Correct. Yeah. And some politicians in power or position.
Yeah, then you feel a little bad. But as I said, ultimately, you know, do your job. Do it professionally. And I think that is a source of great satisfaction for you.
You have spoken out against politicizing military operations. What kind of damage do you think it causes?
See, politicization of military operations, the damage it sort of causes is to your own professionalism. When you start sort of taking decisions based on what you think is politically correct rather than on what should be professionally the right way to go, which is, I think, understood universally among all the militaries, and which is why they keep themselves away from politics, is that it could, over a period of time, start sort of impacting your professional approach. I mean, we are meant to give a professional opinion to the political leadership. That sometimes gets impacted if you have and visibly show sort of political leanings.
And what is the role of media in it, according to you?
Look, the media today, and particularly the social media, and you know how it is, lots of misinformation, disinformation. But again, as I said, as professionals, and just I'm sure as you would do in your career, is try and sort of detach yourself a little bit and try and sort of seek the truth. Not always easy, but that's how it is.
Do you think there should be a control on it, an official control on it?
There has to be some regulation of the social media. I mean, you just cannot let it carry on the way it is.
Then some people talk about freedom of expression.
No, there is. So I'm not saying we should clamp down.
No, I am with you. I personally believe that what you are saying is absolutely
right. Some sense of regulation, some amount of regulation, and I think the social media platforms are also understanding that, because their platforms are also being misused by a lot of people. And so I think some regulation is certainly required.
Do you think India is still in the path of non-alignment?
So I think we have framed it differently now, and we are saying it's strategic autonomy, that we will do things which are in our best national interest, and we are not going to get aligned or become allies with one party. And you see that because India's growing ties with the US and growing ties also with Russia, because we feel that whatever actions we take, if we have to buy energy supplies from Russia, for example, that's in our national interest and we will do it. So that's the sort of path which we have been following and which I think is right. Now, some people say it's just a little sort of nuanced approach to what was non-alignment earlier.
To who do you give credit for this balance?
All the credit has to go to the political leadership, the people that they have. And we have a very suave and, you know, understanding foreign minister. He's been in diplomacy for all his life. And so very articulate the way he positions India's stance and the way he's able to clearly explain it. So I think we have a good foreign minister here today.
We do a lot of we have a lot of budget for our defense forces. Why do you think it's a required thing? Because we are surrounded by certain people.
You look at what your challenges are, security challenges. So you have Pakistan on one side, which since independence has shown hostility towards India. We fought 3+1, 4 wars almost with them. We have now a much larger, stronger neighbor in China, which since 2020, you know, has been sort of attempting to use military coercion on an unsettled border. And then you have internal security issues, Jammu Kashmir, the Northeast. And so there is a requirement of adequate forces to be able to deal with these challenges, and that automatically translates into a defense budget that permits you not only to sort of have a military of this size, but also equip it properly so that it's capable of meeting its challenges.
About the surgical strikes, when people were saying, did they actually happen or they did not happen? This is my personal curiosity. Why wasn't it sort of thrown at the faces of those people who were saying it, that this is...
So let me tell you, I mean, frankly, when these things started coming out, I was personally of the opinion that, and we had videos, we had pictures, which subsequently were released by the government, I think after almost 10 years or so. I mean, my personal opinion at that time was that we should put these out so that any, you know, detractors and people who are saying, has it happened, not only from our side, but even Pakistan said...
Yeah, they got some foreign nationals,
They said nothing has happened at all, nobody has come. So but you know, that was the decision that the government took at that time not to release it, though they did it later. But as I said, my personal opinion was it could have been done.
And you were at J&K when this operation was taking place?
Yeah, so I was the army commander that time.
Yeah, I know that. I want to ask you so many questions about all that.
The planning for the surgical strike was done in my headquarters. We were responsible for the...
And how much time did it take to plan it?
So actually the planning started after...
Give us a little brief about it.
Yeah, so... Look, the trigger for the surgical strike was the attack on the Uri garrison.
Absolutely.
And the attack on Uri garrison took place on the 18th of September. And I think very quickly, the political leadership, military leadership, we all got together and decided that we need to respond to this. And we need to respond strongly. We cannot just become defensive and say, we will do anything in our own territory.
Because that's what previous governments had done when 26/11 happened.
Yeah, that we had to go across and strike in camps which are in Pakistan territory. So that decision, as I said, was after 18th, and the operation went in on the night of 28th. So within 10 days, we had planned, selected the people, and launched them across. And it wasn't a single operation. So I know there's a movie which has been made on which shows one single operation. Actually, we went across at multiple places.
Okay.
Yeah. Starting from across Jammu region to across Kashmir. So we had, on the same night, we launched five operations.
And how much time did it take to complete these operations?
So we went in, so it was at night. We started just after it became dark.
Where were you at that time?
I was in my headquarters.
Is it called war room or something like that?
Yeah, it was. It's called an operations room. And we were getting the feed from the UAV, the drone which is up in the air. That feed was coming to my headquarters. We were watching. Couldn't really see what people can eyeball, but we were watching. So we went in, and by about 7 in the morning, everybody was back. So it was a night operation.
What was the operation called?
We did not name it at all.
Okay.
See, we were very conscious about security and that information about this should not leak out. Just a handful of people in my headquarters also knew. I mean, not everybody didn't know about it. And so we decided deliberately not to give it a name because people start talking about names and people will ask, what is this?
And you were in constant touch with the Prime Minister. They were up and...
I was not personally in touch with the Prime Minister. That was...
When I say you
in
mean...
Delhi. Delhi, the Chief of Army Staff.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was in Udhampur.
Okay.
The Chief of Army Staff was in Delhi.
Okay.
And he was briefing them regularly.
And a lot of Western countries were not very, very happy about our achievements. Why do you think the Western countries want us to be always submissive and not so brilliant? Because
I think they somehow see, India and Pakistan are two countries, nuclear armed. They sometimes feel that, their behavior is irresponsible and could lead into a much larger sort of conflict. We know how to do things. We have been living with this situation since independence. And so there is a great deal of maturity in when we carry out.
Exactly. And we are the oldest civilization on Earth. Sometimes it really, really angers me. their editor's notes and things like that. They sort of condescendingly behave towards us. Does it anger you?
But I think now we have clearly stated that what we will do is in our national interest, and also the country has progressed so much. I mean, looking at the fifth largest economy in the world, I think there is growing stature politically, diplomatically, economically. So I don't think, those past times when people would look down on you and say whether this country after independence will even survive as a single entity. Mm. I think those times are gone.
You have a very, very calm way of saying things. I'm sure it's over the period of years that you have it, and you, how army people also automatically choose the right words. It sort of impresses me and baffles me also. There is not a single word which will go which is a little loose. I have to think about 1,000 things, though maybe I'm given my dialogues and I speak.
Maybe. You have to live two lives, I guess.
Exactly. Oh, I have lived 541 lives. Yeah. Russia and India have had a strong military bond. How important has and its relationship with Bharat?
India-Russia relationship is not new. Mm. I think it has a long history behind it. There's a great deal of consistency in how Russia has come to India's aid when required. I mean, 71 war, for example. Mm. We've had the kind of military equipment that we have got from Russia. Mm. For example, nuclear submarines that they leased us. I mean, that equipment wouldn't have come from anywhere else. And so there is a great deal of history behind the ties.
So what is the reason of this bonding? Is there any particular reason?
As I said, it's because they have sort of treated us with a great deal of maturity. They have looked at our national interests. A number of cases where in the Security Council resolutions, etc., they have come to our help. There was a Treaty of Friendship in 1971. So when the American aircraft carrier sailed into the Bay of Bengal to sort of pressurize us when we were fighting the Bangladesh war. Mm. It was the Russians who sort of came to our help and said, we are there, so don't get pressurized by the US. So I'm saying there is such a long history of close ties. The fact that they have looked after our national interest, which is why today you see India has sort of refused to outrightly condemn Russia. During the Ukraine war. Mm. We have continued to procure our energy supplies and military equipment from them.
And what has the Make in India program done for Bharat's military?
Let me put it this way. Today we are the largest arms importer in the world.
Mm? Okay.
India is the biggest arms importer in the world. Accounting for almost 10% of global arms imports. And if you want to be an industrial and scientific power and a military power, this situation obviously is not good. And so we need to develop our own indigenous capability. And I think the push that has been given by the government is excellent. And they have said that slowly over a period of time, you suddenly cannot grow a defense industrial base from the ground up within a year. But the policies that they have put in place, the processes that they have put in place, that slowly we will indigenize and we will produce our own arms and equipment, I think is an outstanding initiative. Will it happen quickly? Maybe not. But the trajectory and direction is absolutely clear. So I'm saying in the next 5-6 years, you will see a strong enough defense industrial base in India. I think it's an excellent initiative by the government. They are completely determined to push it.
You've said that citizens are often forgotten in the national security narrative. What do you mean by that?
See, I wrote a national security strategy. And one pillar of that was protecting our people. Hmm. The point I'm making is national security is not merely about it's important to protect your borders, to make sure internal security is good. But ultimately, it's the citizens of this country. And why I am saying protecting them is because you have issues like jobs, you have issues like environment, climate change, how it is going to impact. Urbanization is going to take place. People are going to move from
villages
to towns. How will you provide them the sort of facilities that they need? This also, I think, should form an integral part of how we look at our national security, which is why I said, people also must be at the heart of our discourse and discussions on national security.
Yeah, that's, I think, very well said. But also, you see, even the terrorist attacks countrywide, they decreased completely.
Yeah,
and they were rampant.
Absolutely.
Earlier. So if there's a political will, things do.
Absolutely. I think you have to credit this government for the approach that they have taken against terrorism within the country and as far as Pakistan is concerned, that we need to be tough on this. And I think it's working. As you said, the number of terrorist attacks within the country has reduced. Otherwise, they were happening all over the country, not only in Jammu and Kashmir.
Yeah, even exactly, within, all over the country.
Yeah. So the pressure, I think, that the government has applied politically, diplomatically, in international circles, and the fact that there is some readiness to use military force against Pakistan, up the ante, take some more risks. I think that that policy is succeeding.
This is my personalized question before we finish. It's short time, and with you, the conversation has happened. Do you, now this, we are in a time where biopics are made on army generals and the kind of work that you have done. If your biopic was to be made, or if you write an autobiography, let me put it like that, what would you call the book that you write about your life, if you ever thought of it?
That's a difficult question. What would I call a
book? Because I see a lot of army officers, army generals writing their memoirs now.
I really haven't.
You have a very distinguished career in the armed forces.
I haven't. I don't know. Serving with honor or something like that is what I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any particular actor you have in mind apart from me?
I think you are the best person to do it. You have been in so many sort of biopic roles.
How wonderful! Wow, that's amazing. Thank you, Lieutenant General Dipinder Singh Hooda. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
And thank you for watching. Join me next week as we uncover a new layer in yet another debate, and let's talk Bharat. I'm Anupam Kher. Goodbye.